Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans for the week of December 17th, 2018. As always, I am your host, Robert Vallejos, and I'm joined this week by the pay-per-view only exclusive and MMA Torch OG, Sean Ennis. Sean, how's it going tonight?
I am doing great. Thank you for having me on.
I don't believe you.
Well, the Eagles are up on the Rams still with a minute and a half left. Looks like they're going to pull this one out. And, you know, we had a couple of good matches tonight, so life is good.
So everyone listening to this will already know the result of the football game, so feel free to tweet in your spoilers in real time. But if you want to tweet us with a more serious topics or non-serious topics, there are several ways to get in touch with the show. You can tweet at the main MMA Torch Twitter account. That is at MMA Torch. That's at MMATORCH. And, of course, the show proper Twitter account, MMALivecast@gmail.com. That is MMALivecast. @gmail.com. And if you want to get at us long form, we got two different emails tonight that are going to kind of spur on some segments. You can certainly do so. The email address is MMALivecast@gmail.com. That is MMALivecast@gmail.com. Okay, Sean, let's get right into it. As I sort of jokingly said at the top of the show, you're on tonight because it's a pay-per-view night, which just means that our recording schedule is altered, which means you can be on. Indeed. But it's a special night, usually once a month on the show, where we get to lead off with WWE and talk WWE. And as like we've been saying, the great thing about it now is every pay-per-view, one way or another, is usually headlined by a former UFC champion nowadays in some form or fashion. So we do get that to talk about. So we are just coming off of minutes away from WWE's TLC pay-per-view. From what you saw, Sean, overall, what's the grade you would give to this show?
This, to me, is a tough one to grade because there was basically two really good matches and everything else was completely forgettable, at least to me. So I would give it, let's say, like a 6.
So a failing grade.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I'm kind of there, too, in that I didn't think anything was really that bad tonight, but I didn't think anything was really that good either, where I was just completely blown away by it. I think it's just, and we'll talk about this when we get into the specifics, I think it's a symptom of just the television has been so bad that it's just hard to be invested in anything.
Yep, I would agree.
And I think, you know, as we'll talk about, especially with the Rollins-Ambrose match, that was really the case where you just don't care about what's happening. And so much of tonight was more about that storytelling type of wrestling, which can be good. But if you're not invested in the story, then that type of wrestling, I think, can really fall on deaf ears. And that's why you had some boring chants in a lot of the matches. But let's talk about the main event and what we're most concerned about tonight. Triple threat match with Asuka defeating Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair. Triple threat ladder match, TLC match, triangle ladder match, whatever you want to call it. It's a ladder match with three women involved in it. And, of course, our MMA connection is Ronda Rousey comes out at the end and throws both Charlotte Flair and Becky Lynch off of the ladder for Asuka to capture her title. Really weird way to kind of end the match, I thought. I'm not necessarily going to say it's good or bad because it still has to really set in of what it was. But how do you feel like Ronda being used in a completely heel mode here?
Yeah, I think that was, you put it perfectly because it was a weird way to end it, but I don't know that it was necessarily bad because it was interesting. I don't really know, it makes you want to see where they're going to go from here, but at the same time, like, I have no faith in WWE storytelling, so, like, outside of pay-per-views, and it'll be interesting to see. I'm not necessarily optimistic that we'll get something satisfying, but it was a great match up till that point.
It really was, and we shouldn't undersell it. Everything I was saying about the storytelling not being great and a little bit of slower pace, that did not apply to the main event, which might have been why some of the other matches had the pacing that they did. That's another very old school thing, if you will, too. So that way the main event can have its moment. I thought it was weird too, and they got to know that in the hardcore fans who attend event minds. Out of the three of those women, Ronda Rousey is the least liked one. I think Charlotte might be the best heel, and people. It's a weird thing with Charlotte where people want her to be heel and they like booing her as a heel, but it's more of like a respect thing. It's a little bit less of the Roman Reigns kind of situation. They just feel that's where she is best cast, and they will rebel against it when she's not put in that zone. But it's still a. it's still a trial run, I think, with that fan base and Ronda Rousey. And while it's mostly gone well, we have seen cracks in the armor. So do you think they're content to let her be booed in maybe some of these bigger matches?
I hope so. I mean, the thing is, it's so hard to explain because, like, you want WWE to persist in their positioning of characters despite reactions sometimes, but not other times. You know, like last month after the last pay-per-view, when Charlotte went crazy on Ronda Rousey and hit her with a kendo stick and everybody was cheering and everything like that, to me, the fans were cheering that booking because Charlotte should be a heel, you know? And but they didn't know what to do with her after that, so they made her act like a face a couple times, made her act like a heel a couple times, and she just hasn't been consistent. Until tonight, I thought she acted mostly heel anyway. But then with Ronda Rousey, you know, are they going to back away from having her be the top babyface? I don't think they will, but, you know, I don't think they should even on Raw, because there's no one on Raw that's going to really challenge her for that position. Whereas if she was on SmackDown, I think she'd be better positioned as a heel. It's relative to who you're working with in these programs, which is kind of a weird position to be in, and, you know, too nuanced for the way that WWE books. So, you know, I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, and nuance is never their strong point. No. It's, you know, black and white generally is their strong point. And when they ever claim to have shades of gray, it's because they're being incompetent with what they're doing. And then they find something that works. That's kind of how that goes there. Yeah, it's weird because, you know, Brock Lesnar is in that thing. He is heel or face based on the feud, but he's there so infrequently that it doesn't seem like a big show situation. It just doesn't feel like he's turned 50 times. It just feels like it's a really big match and he's involved, and that's what's going to happen based on his opponent is how they do it with Brock. I think a completely different situation with Ronda in that she's the top star on TV virtually every week. She does do quite a bit of live events, so you have to be a bit more delicate. And like you said, it's different from each brand. On Raw, as long as she's kept away, I would say, from Bayley and Sasha, she's going to get cheered against all those opponents. It was kind of what we thought they were doing with Roman Reigns earlier in the year when they sent everybody who was lumbering over to Raw and all the good wrestlers to SmackDown.
Yeah, seriously.
I don't know if they've done that on purpose on that show or just kind of it's how it's played out, but that is definitely the case over there. And even like lower down on the SmackDown depth chart, you could see her getting booed against someone like Naomi, who the fans seem to have quite a bit of affection for. So it's definitely a very slippery slope there. What'd you make of Becky Lynch's star power tonight? Do you think it's held from where we were about a month ago when we last spoke?
Oh, absolutely. I do. I mean, the crowd was hot for her all night. Every time she came on the screen, you know, they would chant Becky during other things. I think she's still on fire. I don't think this loss, you know, quote unquote loss, is going to do anything to her popularity. I think she's still, you know, the hottest act in the company, really.
Yeah. And her potentially being in the Royal Rumble, I think, just adds so much to that match. And if Charlotte's in it, but we don't know how the title picture is going to shake out. That's the thing about doing a show like in the immediate aftermath. It's hard to kind of take out the old clipboard and put the yarn connecting all the dots of where everybody goes. But it's like you said, it makes you intrigued about the storytelling going forward. And that's another one of their default kind of settings that they go to is, oh, we're telling a story. Just be patient. That's usually, you know, kind of one of their covers for we don't know where this is going and be patient. I have a little bit of faith that they have a pretty clear roadmap here. Asuka's an interesting case here because she's someone who amazingly the year or so of haphazard booking didn't really seem to faze her either. She still had enough goodwill, I think, from her NXT run built up, and it wasn't like a Shinsuke Nakamura situation where you were wondering who was the responsible party for this thing failing. I think a lot of people just thought it was on the booking. That was, like you were saying, a cheering and booing at the booking. With that said, I never envisioned her first title win coming, I wouldn't say in a cheap fashion, but more of an opportunistic fashion, more of an edge type of winning the match. Mm-hmm. You know, she's this supposed to be this killer where she's going to kick people's heads off. And she really didn't happen here. Do you think that's going to harm her going forward, at least through WrestleMania?
I don't think so. I mean, it's all like we've been talking about. It's all about where she's positioned at this point. Like, I think she's more likely to be positioned against Charlotte Flair as a babyface with Charlotte coming up as the heel and then having Becky against Ronda Rousey at WrestleMania. I think those two matches are, that's easy booking right there, you know? You have Becky win the Royal Rumble and challenge Ronda for the belt at WrestleMania. You have Charlotte get the number one contendership somehow and challenge Asuka for the SmackDown title. And I think that's, you know, it's too easy so they'll definitely screw it up somehow. But I mean, to me, that's a no brainer.
I think that's how they should go either, because you have two natural stories there and you have two actual main events. The whole point of this brand split is so you can have multiple main events. I mean, that's not the whole point, but there's other,
right.
It's supposed to be one of the key features. Is that you have multiple main events that you take on the road and you take all over these places. I think you would essentially have that at WrestleMania, where in this era now of the brand extension and of taking women's wrestling seriously, the women's title matches are never on the same level. And it's mostly been the SmackDown title match that's been pretty relegated down. And you see it at the supercards like WrestleMania. You see, you know, the contrast of what's more important and what's less important. I think in that scenario that you laid out, Sean, then you have very important matches with big names cross. You have an international star in Asuka. You have a legacy star in Charlotte. You have the biggest organic star they've got right now in Becky Lynch, and then their biggest crossover mainstream star this side of John Cena in Ronda Rousey. You have a lot there. I get the feeling though they're headed to triple threat land after tonight.
I know. I really hope they're not, but it does. You know, that would be what they do.
Yeah, and it's like I'm not like a Wade Keller style of anti triple threatist, but in general for the big matches, I think you should try to avoid. I think like tonight that's a good triple threat in a more gimmicky match, and it just doesn't have the same gravitas. I think for all the things they care about, like the talk shows and the hype and all that, when you got to explain why there's three people instead of these two personalities in a match. Let's move on to what came right before that. And I think we can say, based on what the reactions were, maybe the disappointment of the night in a lot of ways, Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins, they went 23 minutes and it felt every bit of those 23 minutes,
man,
with Ambrose getting the win over Rollins. Were you as disappointed in this as it seemed like most people were?
I really was. This, I felt like this could be, I mean, coming out of last month's card, we were excited for this match. And, you know, I remember, I think I said I was going to give the TV a shot coming out of the card, because I hadn't been watching regularly, just been watching highlights. And boy, that did not last long, I can tell you that much. And this was a big reason why. I mean, this should have been a huge angle that had a ton of heat, and it just fizzled on impact. I mean, there has not been an ounce of heat to this since the last pay-per-view. And I don't really, I mean, I see how they've killed it, but I don't understand how you can mess this up so badly. And this match was ice cold. It was methodical, which, you know, I mean, we'll talk about AJ Styles, Daniel Bryan in a minute, but methodical isn't necessarily a bad thing. And this did not, the style that they worked did not fit the story of this match, or, you know, the story coming into this match. And it just was, it felt just like a mess. It just dragged and was not fun to watch.
And it's weird because historically these guys have great chemistry with each other.
Yeah.
Remember their series in 2014 where we never got a good resolution to any of those matches. And I think it's because Ambrose never got the big win that everyone was kind of looking for in that series. It ended with the hologram Bray Wyatt and all that. But even the television matches, they clicked. You could tell they're guys who had spent a lot of time with each other and around each other and really knew how to push each other's buttons in the ring. And this was just different. And I don't know, this is really the first real match we've gotten with Ambrose as a heel.
Yeah.
And I'm really scared that this is going to be as old school as Ambrose always likes to talk about. He loved the old NWA champions and all that. I hope this isn't what he looks like. And we keep referring to that methodical style. And like I said at the top, the methodical worked with Hulk Hogan because everybody in the world wanted to see Hulk Hogan slam the big monster that Bobby Heenan was bringing on him. There's got to be a reason for that. That type of wrestling can work in certain contexts. This wasn't it. And I think, furthermore, this is two guys who can go. So when you see this type of match, it just... It gets bad, and then there's a lot of conversation always about how appropriate it is to use Roman Reigns' illness as a storyline prop, the way that it's being used, and I think that does hurt it. But just for the respect, like you said, it's not the person that's getting the heat; it's the company and what they're being scripted, and even the fact that you have to take 2 seconds to wonder, like, is that too offensive or should they have gone there? That's not the right thing. It's okay to be offensive as long as you just offend the person and you don't have to be logically thinking about whether you should or should not be offended by something. Yeah, exactly. I think when we're going there, we're just thinking too deeply about pro wrestling.
We've given it more thought than they have already.
Yeah, and that's what happens on podcasts. That's why wrestlers hate people outside of wrestling who do podcasting.
That's true.
They hate the fact that people think about their job more than they do.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other Pro Wrestling Media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at PWBoom.com. Once again, that's PWBoom.com.
With that said, Sean, you've been pegging Seth Rollins for the Brock Lesnar spot at WrestleMania. Are you still going to stand by that?
I am. You know, I think here's the thing though. They've got to get him out of this feud immediately. they got to move him on and get him onto something else. You know, for whatever reason, making an emergency that he's got to move away from Dean Ambrose and just call it off, be done with it, and have him start chasing the maybe they can get away with having him chase Ambrose for another month until the Royal Rumble, then have him win the Royal Rumble. But I mean, you got to heat him back up, man. I don't think it's going to be hard to heat him back up at this point, but if you keep him in there with Ambrose much longer and this stuff keeps dragging on, it's going to be an uphill battle. The question is whether they're even interested in waging the battle at all.
Yeah. I mean, it takes just a Balor or McIntyre match with him to get him,
right,
you know, for people to remember what they like about him. But, you know, we can reference back to 2001, where it's like the big heated feud was Triple H and Austin, and that bled into the Rumble a little bit. But then at the No Way Out pay-per-view, they had their blow off before Mania. So yeah, we could have a similar type of situation here with that if they're going to stick with that feud. But I felt in a lot of ways tonight was about getting the belts away from Charlotte and Becky and Seth. Yep. To yep. put them into the Royal Rumble. That was the kind of the function. You know, sometimes these December pay-per-views were always like the heel reign supreme pay-per-views because right. You get the belts on all the heels so the babyfaces can win them come WrestleMania. And I think that's what's going on there. The Ambrose thing, though, I was kind of thinking he would be the new Mick Foley. Remember back in the day where people would have a blood feud with Mick Foley and then they would be like the crown guy the next month where they would beat the other draw. It happened with Triple H, happened with Edge, happened with Orton, happened with Rock, happened after Austin got the title and he was the first guy. I was hoping that Ambrose was finally going to be that guy, and it still may be the case. We got to talk about the commentary in this thing. Was the commentary just god-awful, and not even in their normal god-awfulness where they're entertaining each other? They were bored as can be tonight, weren't they?
They cannot figure out how to either use or not use Renee Young in this feud, and or as it pertains to Dean Ambrose, and it just is cringeworthy. It's terrible to listen to, and you're right, they were bored, I think, and just didn't. It sounded like they just didn't want to like it was just going too long for them.
Yeah, and you could tell whenever they're just tripping over their words, but, you know, where they're struggling, it's like, yeah, did everyone have, like, a really late flight, or was there some big party last night?
Yeah, and then Corey Graves at the end did the old, we got a new champion here, so I thought the match was going to keep going, and then it ended. So I was actually confused.
He didn't stick to the Fulham protocol, the 1-3, got him, no!
Yeah, exactly. 1-2, and no!
apparently he didn't learn from the school of Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon commentating there. Yeah, the announcers in general, like you said, the Renee Young situation. I think it would be a better storyline hook if she found a way to like recuse herself actually during the matches. Yes. So it becomes less of a distraction, and then it becomes, I think, even more dramatic because it's like Renee is put in this awkward position. Instead, she doesn't come across as sympathetic at all when she's supposed to be the babyface announcer in all the other segments. She kind of seems like a big jerk in the in the Ambrose segments.
Yeah, it's very weird, and I think it takes away from her reputation or her rapport with the fans in general.
Yeah, it's not good, and part of it just we talk all the time how commentary is bad in general. But tonight it wasn't about their canned lines; it was just I think they didn't do a good job in general. Yeah. I think a lot of these guys are probably pretty good at commentary. It's the system that they're in that's not conducive. But tonight I just think in general they just did a bad job. Let's talk about Daniel Bryan and AJ Styles, and please. I need you to convince me because I saw the internet love this match and I hated it.
Oh. How dare you?
But I'm willing to give it another chance. Probably after we record, I'm going to rewatch it because, it was the type of thing where I was scrolling through Twitter and I was like, okay, I missed something because I did not enjoy that match at all. So tell me why it was so great and tell me why I'm so wrong.
I just loved it for its simplicity. I mean, it was two well-defined characters who the fans bought in their roles just going after each other. And, you know, the ending wasn't, it wasn't a blow off ending, which is fine. I'm fine with this feud going on indefinitely at this point. But it was just two guys doing what they do. I mean, and if you've seen Daniel Bryan had a little Easter egg in there. If you ever saw his work in ROH as the American Dragon,
he would I have till five.
Yes. I love that. I loved it. I was so happy when he did it. He only did it that one time and he didn't do it quite as emphatically as he used to do it. But it was great. You know, tell him the ref he has until five. That was tremendous. But I mean, Daniel Bryan as a heel, I just I really just enjoy his work. So you know, I loved that, and I loved that the fans were going along with it. You know, I had a little back and forth with Wade on Twitter about how when you do faces and heels right, it's not passé. You know, people will buy into it, and if you define the characters correctly and cast them correctly, you know, where they should be, then you have crowds that will cheer who you want them to cheer and boo who you want them to boo. I mean, I didn't hear a single battle chant in this fight, in this match, which is remarkable if you think where Daniel Bryan was even a year ago. You know, when they were cheering for AJ Styles, they were cheering for AJ Styles. There was no yay boo going back and forth on the when they were going toe to toe. It was only or there was no you know it wasn't they weren't cheering both sides. They were cheering AJ Styles. So to me, I mean, that heightened my enjoyment of it, but it was also just the work rate of these two guys who are just so crisp and so tight and, you know, and laying everything in. And it was just, I just really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I am going to rewatch it and I'm going to have to amend my take. I might just been in a bad mood at that point. Maybe it was Randy and Ray. They brought me down to a level.
That would be understandable.
Yeah, because I was trying to figure out what I missed. To your point, though, I mean, this heel Daniel Bryan is awesome, and it's amazing that he's not getting cheered. I mean, think about that. He's supposed to be like this, you know, environmentalist lefty, and he didn't get booed in California against the Southern guy.
I know it.
That's amazing on several levels. Well, credit to AJ Styles in general that he's remained likable through all this. You know, usually, like, the babyface is the most unlikable person in the world, and I think it's just because, you know, they always say, well, AJ doesn't main event, that title doesn't main event, doesn't even main event SmackDown. They kind of benefit from that in that they're kind of underexposed. They're kind of like this hidden part of the overall storyline.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's been, like you said, it's not overexposed and it's just enough. I think it's great.
Yeah. And then if they do reset this thing at the Royal Rumble, I think you're going to be safe. There's probably no chance of Roman Reigns coming into the Royal Rumble this year. Unfortunately, this year, we'll say. And Daniel Bryan will probably still be the champion, so there's no need for him to be in the Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
So I think the Royal Rumble can finally have some purity to it. Although, what a troll move would it be? I mean, of course, now he can't be number 30 because of what happened earlier, but what a troll move would it be for Bryan to come in at 30 as the champion and actually win it this year when he'd already be in the main event?
Oh, man, that's some next level trolling right there.
Well, you know, Vince is coming back tomorrow night to shake things up.
Oh my gosh. When I saw that, I'm thinking it's just desperate. Like, who does he think we think is behind the terribleness of the television that
passed Baron Corbin
in the first place? Yeah, Baron Corbin, exactly.
Poor Baron.
Poor Baron.
Like he's not good, but he's no more or less good than a lot of other people have been in that situation.
He's not allowed to be good. He's not allowed to be good. It's a terrible role. The heel general manager is a no-win role.
Is Vince like the only good one we've ever had?
Yeah, because he was the first one. And then and ever since then, it's been, you should have never had a heel GM after that.
I think the Triple H Stephanie ones have been okay at times, but it's just dosages. And I think Vicky was very good.
Yeah, Vicky was good. She was entertaining.
Yes, and Johnny Ace too.
Saying that word, but
they're in the entertain. Well, that's a dirty word on wrestling podcasts.
<I know. laughs>
You're not allowed to be entertained. If you are sports entertained, you'll be banned from all wrestling related discussion.
I am entertained by the sports.
Well, sports are entertaining, correct?
Exactly.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't hate the term sports entertainment, but I know that might go against the company line over here. I think it's a useful way of describing what wrestling is. It just doesn't have to be superimposed above wrestling.
You can use it to describe wrestling. You just can't use it instead of wrestling. That's the thing.
I just don't need to say that Stone Cold Steve Austin was the greatest sports entertainer of all time.
Exactly.
That's not good English.
No, it's terrible English. It's bad everything is what it is.
Speaking of somebody who doesn't always speak great English, let's talk about former UFC champion Ronda Rousey.
Oh, well done.
Taking out Nia Jax. This is the redemption match, I would say, for Rousey in a lot of ways. She had a rough night, as we spoke about, at Survivor Series, and she had what I thought was a very good performance against Nia Jax. Wasn't a blowaway type of thing, but Nia Jax isn't the easiest opponent to have a good match with, and it wasn't the type of match that they had previously where it was just kind of Nia throwing Ronda around. Ronda does get the win at 10:50. What do you think of Ronda's performance here?
Ronda is better than she has any right to be, and I am continually impressed by her work in the ring, and I was very glad this time that she turned down the conversations, didn't end up talking a bunch during the match, which is great. The less she talks, the better, so that was good. Nia Jax is just not good, and to ask Ronda Rousey to carry her is not fair to Ronda Rousey, but she did an admirable job. So this was passable, which is the highest of compliments at this point.
I mean, that match was better than any of the ones that Alexa Bliss had with her.
Oh,
with
yeah,
Nia,
for sure.
And you know, Alexa's a pretty decent wrestler and has been around for a long time. Rousey is basically Sean Ennis at this point, where I get nothing out of her on a week-to-week basis, but on pay-per-view nights, in front and center. Because Ronda's terrible on Raw every week, but she's really good on pay-per-view matches.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's just the newness, probably, more than anything, but... And it's just Raw's just bad. Like, so it sucks everything down. There's no gems on Raw.
No.
You know, look, we're talking about how bad Rollins has been. And he was great for like a whole year. And the current state of Raw has brought us to that. Yeah, I thought she had a good night over here. Even in the main event segment, which she did, I think she did it very effectively, because what a character trait. She said she was going to do something, and she didn't just forget that she was mad at those other two women the way baby faces tend to do. She remembered everybody that she was mad at, and I thought she did a good job here. I do think there's a bit of normalization, though, of her matches that's hurting it just slightly, and that's kind of inevitable, but it's like, I think her first few matches were really good because we just thought she was going to be totally awful.
Yeah.
And now she's just, you know, she just looks like a pro wrestler and she's much smoother out there. So they're losing a little bit of that, I think. And I think we're getting close to that area where it's going to be, it might be kind of awkward if she just has general matches. I think she's pretty good, though, as a Hogan, which is basically what she does. That's the type of match that she's doing right now. And it's easy to do that with like a Nia Jax. It was a little weird with a Nikki Bella, but you know, her time is coming though now, because look at what she's got ahead of her in either a singles or triple threat match with, you know, some of the other bigger stars in the company. So I'm kind of excited for what we get from Ronda, as long as she's just not cutting promos.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, I think that's why she's, you know, the point that you just hit, her being like a Hogan character, I think that's why she's destined to be a heel, and hopefully sooner rather than later, you know, before the fans completely turn on her, because the grace period will end eventually. And when it does, I have a feeling it's going to get real ugly real quick, especially if you, when you put her up against Becky Lynch, which is what they should do for WrestleMania, because that match will be so hot. You know, the heat behind that match will be so intense, and it'll be great because everyone's going to assume that they're going to put Rousey over and she's going to get booed out of the building, and it's going to be wonderful. So they need to do it. But where was I? So hopefully they'll position her correctly and make her a heel and team her up with Shayna Baszler and the other two, Jessamine Duke and whatever the other one's name is, and get them all in a faction, have Ronda headed up, and then have Shayna and the others be her enforcers, and you know, it'll be it would work. I think I just feel like it would work really well to have Becky Lynch positioned against those four. Hopefully they go in that direction, but I have no confidence that they will.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, when Shayna comes to the main roster, she's going to be the biggest heel like ever.
Oh, Shayna's tremendous. She's tremendous.
She is, but I think she has a little bit of respect in NXT. Like, you know, because she's still an NXT wrestler.
Yes.
So there's that sort of bond that the audience has with her. I think on the main roster, as soon as they smell a hint of a push to her, based on her association with Ronda, I think she will be the greatest heel. And she's already kind of started it on social media, which, we always talk about social media. Ronda's the heel on social media. She's such a big heel.
100%. She's a heel in real life. That's why she's, yes. That's why she's a heel.
She always
media.
Has been. She was been. For years.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, man. I think she would be a tremendous heel, and if you get her together with the other three, I mean, that's a great faction, especially against babyfaces as hot as Becky Lynch, and you could even revive Sasha and Bayley if you put them with Becky against the four horsewomen. I think you've got. I mean, that's just
money, that match is big
money
again.
Waiting to be made, man.
I think the way the other four, I mean, Bayley and Sasha are stuck in purgatory, but I think they're still there, but they're aligned together. So I think that the way Charlotte and Becky have been heated up in recent months, that match is huge again. But either way, I think Becky and Ronda, you wonder if WWE doesn't want to turn her heel because they mess with the storyline, but then they don't care about the storyline 98% of the other times.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you know, they had Charlotte as a heel, and supposedly it's because she looked good in interviews and had a recognizable name. So if you're going to say the mainstream is not really going to care about your storyline anyway, then what's the harm of turning her heel?
Right, exactly.
Unless it's a Cena situation where she sells a ton of merch. I never bought that, though.
No, I didn't either.
I always thought they just wanted Cena to be, you know, G.I. Joe to be their face. I just thought that's what it was.
That's the kind of promotion that Vince McMahon likes to run. He likes the baby face at the top, and John Cena was as white bread as you can get. So that's what it was.
And it's funny. One last thought on this, then we'll move on to the rest of the card. But we talked about her being a Hogan. So she's basically in Vince's long line of really despicable baby faces that he's always booked, where like John Cena and Hulk Hogan would talk a good game, but they were never actually friends, and they would rake the eyes and rake the back. Yeah. Poor Natty never can get any help from Ronda. Natty sacrifices her life to help Ronda, and
Natty had to take out three people by herself tonight. Meanwhile, Ronda's going out there and interfering in other matches when she's pissed off at the people in it, but she won't go out there and help Natty to take out three people by herself.
Oh, man. So like, let's play around with this. So we need a storyline where do we get where Ronda is way too flirty with Tyson Kidd?
And they, I mean, like, and that's the whole thing that's kind of disappointing, is like, you know, WWE does not want to miss out on the heel natty turn, the natty heel turn. And, you know, you can see it coming a mile away. But, man, you just hope that that the cooler heads prevail and they go with the other thing with Becky. But anyway, maybe the overly flirting with Tyson Griffin would do it. I like it.
Rhonda carries him to the back.
I'm into this. They should hire you for the booking committee, really.
No, it'd be terrible. I'm just booking 80s angles.
What else do they want?
Well, I mean, that's what they do. We were just saying how every guy is the reincarnation of the last guy. So I guess, man, we can go. I mean, we could go really deep, and we can somehow put a Cena Ryder spin on the two of them, and it'll end with Natty being thrown off of some stairs in a wheelchair, and
yeah,
and all that.
I'm into it.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's not good. Let's talk about let's talk about Ray and Randy. It sucked. What'd you think?
Agree.
Okay. Randy Orton's like on his 2006 nostalgia tour, and sadly everyone else can. I mean, Ray can look good, I think, in like tags and in like against a younger guy. He's not broken down enough where he doesn't look good against somebody else that can move. I think you're going to have, at some point, we got to get a Mysterio Daniel Bryan SmackDown main event. That'll be some good stuff, but it's Orton. We got to the point with Orton where you already anticipate it being bad before it happens. Yeah. That you almost don't give it a chance.
Yeah. And it was just so plotting. Like, the whole thing was so plotting, you know, like it was like nothing with spurts of movement, you know, it was, and the setup to the ending of the match, it took forever to set it up. And then it was just over and it was like, thank you.
I don't think you could ever have a good chairs match.
No, you really can't. It's just not a good format.
No, because even like a tables match, there's something fun that kind of happens. Like someone has to go through a table, or a ladder match, you climb the ladder.
Yeah.
A chair is, that's just like a blunt force match. Like there's nothing.
Yeah. A chair
special.
It's meant to inflict a beat down post match, or get you a disqualification, or, you know, a dirty win. Or get you disqualified. It's no good for a match format.
Yeah, in general, like no, like a weapons match like that, that just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not, they would never do like a barbed wire wrap 2x4 match. Like that'd be terrible.
I mean, this is not ECW anyway.
Maybe Axel and Ian would do something like that.
Just got flashbacks of the dipping your hand in glue with the broken
in the
glass.
Glue and then punching each other. Yeah. Gee, I wonder why people don't respect wrestling. What did you think of Finn Balor and Drew McIntyre?
I forgot that it even happened.
Yeah. It wasn't honestly bad.
It was fine. It was fine. And I love both those guys, but it was just not, you know, it was just barely there.
Yeah. I think if your Rollins premonition comes to be, I think we're going to have a whole year of trading the title between McIntyre and Rollins. And I think that'll be a good way to spend our summer.
I believe you are correct.
We don't need to talk about Natty and Ruby Riott. We already talked about that. I thought that was boring as can be, too. It was plotting, like you said.
Yeah. Yeah.
But let's talk about something with actual MMA implications, sort of. You got Braun Strowman and Baron Corbin. Braun Strowman getting the win. He's still injured. His arm's still very, very much messed up. He's still in the sling. But he had the mutiny against him. So it looks like, though, what all that means to anybody who actually cares is, one, the Baron Corbin era is over, so we can all watch Raw happily again. So we're glad we got that out of the way. The core of all problems in this world was Baron Corbin. But more importantly, it looks like we're going to get Braun Strowman and Brock Lesnar at the Rumble. I see some people thinking that maybe he's going to take it from him there, because there seems to be this buzz that like we're going to see Brock in the UFC in March. I don't think so. Like
I don't either.
Yeah, he's if he's got the belt now, he's keeping it till Mania, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't see, if you put the belt on him, I just don't see why you would put it back on Brock to give it to Braun Strowman. I mean, it doesn't feel big enough. If you were going to put it on Strowman, you would have just put it on him in that original match in Saudi Arabia or wherever it was. Is that where they did that?
That's the only caveat, maybe.
Yeah, right.
Is that they didn't want that to be where he was crowned. So they had to you do it on Brock's next date.
Yeah.
But that still seems like a very convoluted way to get that done.
It seems like a convoluted way. They could have just as well done it on Raw, you know? I don't know why you would do it if you were going to give it to Strowman. And Strowman is not a championship guy, which is not...
No, and I think they know that.
Yeah, they should. I mean, they've been promoting wrestling forever. You know, it's not... You don't give the belt to Andre the Giant.
Nope.
You know, he's an attraction.
I mean, even Undertaker never really had title reigns.
Right, not long, extended ones, you know.
Not till he was good wrestler Undertaker in his later years.
Exactly. You know, yeah, and that's the same thing. You know, you don't want Braun Strowman to be your... Braun Strowman's good. You know, he's a very good big man, and he's got a fine personality and everything, but you don't want him to be your champion for, you know, your long-running champion, and I think that's what they're looking for, is to crown that at WrestleMania. So I don't know why you would put it on him at the Rumble to have him lose it at WrestleMania.
You think we might not speak again on the podcast until that match happens. You think this is going to be a Brock Lesnar care match?
Say that again.
Like, is Brock Lesnar going to care in his match for Strowman?
I think he won't not care. I don't think we're gonna get the Daniel Bryan match, but I think we'll get one where he'll put the a passable amount of effort into this one.
Huh. Okay. I believe you. I mean, no, you may be. It feels like if it's not Roman Reigns or one of these midgets, Brock Lesnar does not care in any of his matches.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, and you know, I mean, the last time we saw Lesnar and Strowman, you know, it was not very good. And I don't expect this to be good by any means. But we'll probably get at least a couple F5s anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, it's something I thought of tonight. In WWE, maybe that's why I was a little bit cold even on the AJ Daniel match. Matches of guys the same size aren't always very good for some reason.
Yeah.
Like, you need that size disparity. And so that's a little weird whenever Brock's, you know, he's got that evenness with an opponent. I think Big Show ran up to that with, like, a lot of his matches with Undertaker and Kane as well. And sometimes that's just something that bites you. Anything else you want to talk about on this card?
One quick thing. The Becky Nia interaction where Becky just came in and punched Nia in the face and said, get my name out of your mouth.
That was awesome.
That was great. It was, and I thought it was a great blow off. I don't need to see anything else with Becky and Nia.
Well, I think you can build some cool spots in the Rumble.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I don't think you need to build to a match. I think, you know, get him face to face in the Rumble. And that's a great point. But that's all you need.
Yeah, I mean, Big Show was always kind of like the final boss in the Rumble.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, how are they ever going to get him out of there? he's like won one battle royal in 30 years.
Yeah, that was good.
I thought it was foreshadowing her to be the one that interfered in the main event.
Oh, yeah.
I thought was a pretty good red herring. I wasn't thinking Ronda at all.
Yeah, I wasn't either.
But it's like, you know, it's funny. The Stone Cold template, it only works if people like the person performing it.
Yes.
You know, that when you put that with Roman Reigns, it just like, okay, people don't like you because you seem like a jerk, and then you're acting like a jerk.
Exactly.
But if you like the person, then cool.
It works so well with Becky because Becky was nice for a while. And it's like, and then it was like, okay, well, the company's going to turn her heel, but she's going to outsmart him by being Stone Cold instead. And we're going to cheer and it's going to be great. I mean, that's really what this came down to, you know, is like Becky is subverting the company, or that's what it feels like. You know, obviously everybody's in on it, but it feels like she's subverting the company and saying, hey, I am the good guy here. So go ahead and cheer me and it's fine, you know, and we are, and it's great.
Yeah, I mean, this barely hadn't happened since like the Attitude Era with guys like Rock and Austin, where they went with the crowd.
Yeah.
You know, what a novel concept, huh?
Imagine that.
I would love for other businesses to work the way that monopolistic wrestling works. I mean, like you go to McDonald's and everybody hates the Big Mac, but you're just going to keep serving it and not serve other things. And then your top executives are going to go on Twitter and say how hard it is to make a Big Mac and people should just enjoy it.
And everybody's going to just keep going there and being like, hey, I've been going to McDonald's for 30 years. And where else am I going to get my McDonald's?
Well, there was that Southern restaurant that was really hot for the last 20 years, but then they completely died off. And then Jeff Jarrett tried to open a Whataburger, and it's still around somehow, but it never really caught on. And then there's those Japanese hamburgers that I really like, but I don't get all the, you know, all the fixings with them.
And they're hard to find, you know. They're hard to find. They're a little expensive, so it's tough.
And they last an hour. It takes you an hour to eat the hamburger.
Oh, man. Wade's going to be jealous of our restaurant comparisons at this point.
Well, but then he can't make the hamburger ones, though.
That's true. That's
him true. And Daniel Bryan are going to make some other ones.
Oh, man. Oh, speaking of Daniel Bryan, there's a I'll have to tweet out a link. There was a video. They did like a pre-show where Daniel Bryan came in and cut this promo on the two hosts. And I don't know if I've even seen these two hosts before. But I heard about the video, so I went and found it, and he just went off on them and talked about how they're hawking these shirts that are inorganic cotton, and it was great. I mean, he cut this like 5-minute long promo about leading up to the match tonight and how terrible everybody is, and he's going to kill off consumerism, and it was great.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
Yeah, they better do some Christmas stuff with him in the next couple of weeks.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, with all the shopping and all that, like him railing against consumer. Yeah.
He was like, they made a Yes Movement is Dead shirt. You think I'm wearing it? No.
But it goes back to what we were saying. It's all about the likability or the dislikability of the person.
Yes.
Because I can think of like other people that would have like the environmentalist gimmick, and it wouldn't come across as like. It's weird. Daniel Bryan has a weird ability when he's a bad guy. Like, he's a very comical bad guy, but he's also a jerk, like, in a weird way. It's weird that he's able to straddle that line where he's just entertaining enough. I don't know. I don't know what it, I mean, think about everything he did with Kane.
I know.
Like, he's just this awful little man who's telling these guys who could beat him up what to do. Like, it's such a great character trait.
Yeah, and how terrible he was to AJ Lee and all that stuff, and it's all just it all works. Everything he does is gold. It just is, you know. And it could be this gimmick could be right to censor. I mean, really, you know, but it's great.
Well, right to censor was a great gimmick in itself. It just didn't have the greatest wrestlers in it.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's that would have what a great gimmick that was. Can you imagine something like that today?
Oh man, I can't. You get the good father in there with who was it? Ivory that was there. I
did. Like Val Venus.
Yeah, that's right, Val Venus. Oh gosh,
Stevie Richards,
Chief Morley.
Yeah, I've been watching a lot of '98, '99 lately, and I'm glad they changed their ways from their sinful lifestyle to join.
Oh my goodness,
these days you'd have like the PC police.
That's
they'd
right,
be the biggest PC heels ever.
That'd be good. Yes.
That's good stuff. Let's put that guard to bed and let's talk about the final ever UFC on Fox card, which seems so tame by comparison now with everywhere we just went. But you had a pretty significant main event. Raging Ally Quinta getting a decision victory over Kevin Lee, 48-47, 48-47, and a 49-46. Ally Quinta talking a lot of smack after this fight about what he deserves next, you know, calling his shot for the title. Is it just me or is that a little premature?
That's a little premature.
Yeah, and some people are kind of agreeing with it, and I don't get where that comes from. I think he can now be launched into the upper tier of that division, but that's a loaded division, and he's like the last person I would take as the dream matches that are going on in that division. I mean, last week we were talking about Max Holloway and the damage he can do in that division. And so there's no room there's no room for him at the top thus far. What do you make of the way Kevin Lee's career is kind of turning out here?
Well, it's interesting because he didn't have a great showing last night. And, you know, he's kind of been up and down. You know, he's had some good runs, but he's always kind of, you know, he's only got three losses. But it seems like they come at inopportune times. You know, the loss to Tony Ferguson and the loss to Leonardo Santos when he was getting going. I guess he's got four losses. You know, his first one was to Ally Quinta back that first fight that they had. And, you know, he goes on these little runs and then he just gets kind of derailed. And I've heard, I think he wants to go up to welterweight. Was that what he was talking about doing, I believe?
Yeah, there's been some buzz about it. And I think he's struggled. He's never missed weight, but he's had like a lot of health issues.
He had some tough cuts, apparently.
Yeah, he even had like the staph infection, remember?
Yeah. I don't think that would be a bad move for him. It might be at least a new, get him a new landscape, you know. Guys, a lot of times these guys feel better at higher weights. I mean, look at my guy, Thiago Santos, right? He goes from middleweight to light heavyweight, and now he's just wrecking fools up there. So that's, you know, there's no better example than you can have from Thiago Santos, despite you guys disparaging him on the show last week.
Future champion.
Thiago Santos, right? Yeah, so that might be a good move for him, but he might just be a gatekeeper, which is also fine. You know, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I think he just got elevated a little too quickly in general. Like, yeah. We say this all the time. The fight against Chiesa did get built up pretty well just because they had that weird exchange at the press conference. But he just beat Michael Chiesa, and then he got a title shot. And before that, he didn't have a whole lot else going for him. I mean, he had a nice win streak, as you said, but nothing that would scream to you title shot. And then he got a title shot because the UFC needed a main event. Exactly. So I think if you put it in that context, you don't look at his career as being as sputtering as it would seem to be. And I would love to see him at welterweight and just join that whole mix, because both divisions, though, are so crowded up at the top that it's kind of hard to figure out who goes where. I mean, it's like we're talking about with Ray Janelle, you know, before his latest win, well, he had the title, all the circumstances that surround his title shot against Khabib, where we've all kind of agreed his performance has been a little overstated in that fight. But before then, he had to beat Diego Sanchez and Hawked Real Estate. Like, that was where he was at right before then. So you could pump the brakes. And it just kind of shows, as we were talking about last week, of how uninspiring this main event really was. And not that it was a bad fight, but it just didn't seem like it was UFC on Fox worthy, which is weird to say for guys that had so recently fought for a title. But those are just kind of the circumstances as they landed. Sean, you want to wax poetic about what happened on the co-main event?
Oh, man. The Edson Barboza and Daniel Hooker. Now, last week, you'll remember the gutty performance from Brian Ortega against Max Holloway for that 5-round fight in which Brian Ortega, he absorbed a hellacious amount of punishment. Then here comes Daniel Hooker. And in round two, Edson Barboza just obliterated his entire body from head to toe. I mean, just, you know, from leg kicks to body shots. It would not surprise me if Hooker's got multiple broken ribs. I haven't looked up any stories today to see what the aftermath was of the fight, but he was just getting destroyed. And poor Daniel Hooker just could not go down and just kept on coming forward. And how this fight didn't even need to get into the third round, but it did. And it just got more brutal from there. And he just kept absorbing and absorbing and absorbing. And even when he would try to throw, it was just, he had no juice behind those punches that he was throwing. And Daniel Hooker's a tough dude. He had never been stopped, I don't think, or at least never been knocked out before that fight. And Barboza just, I mean, just brutalized him over the course of it. And finally, mercifully, he went down after a nasty body shot where just biology took over, and it was just a matter of he was not physically able to stand anymore, or else you have to think that he would have just kept on going for as long as he could. But this was, if you didn't get a chance to see it, I would definitely recommend seeking it out. It was some vintage Edson Barboza punishment, and man, I mean, it was fun to watch, but at the same time, you can't help but feel bad for poor Daniel Hooker.
Barboza, he wins dramatically and he loses dramatically.
It's
always such a violent affair. What'd you make of the stoppage coming when it did? There seemed to be some people kind of debating that.
It could have definitely come earlier. I understand why the ref let it keep going, but I mean, it could have easily come a couple minutes before it did. I mean, Hooker had nothing left. When he was, like I said before, when he was coming forward and attacking, he had nothing behind those punches, man. He was never going to catch Barboza with anything at that point. He at least still had some fight in him in the second round. But, man, in that third round, once he started taking, he took multiple spinning kicks to the body from Edson Barboza, and we all know how Edson Barboza kicks. He kicks like he hits like a freaking mule, and it's like a Mack truck. You know, it's you don't want to get hit by Edson Barboza in the body, and he took multiple full force shots to the guts, and just kept on coming, and just it didn't need to be like that. His corner really probably should have thrown in the towel, but you know, not as objectionable a non-stoppage as we've seen before, but certainly could have been stopped before it was.
Yeah, it seems recently, especially, we've seen so much bad officiating that this one just didn't even stick out. This just seemed like a poor judgment call versus just blatantly bad officiating like we've gotten so much lately. Yet Sergio Pettis dropping a decision to Rob Font. Sergio Pettis making his bantamweight division, bantamweight debut in the division. Do you think we got a future here with Sergio Pettis, or is this loss kind of indicative of more?
I don't know. This is one of those fights where I do remember that it happened, but I don't remember anything about it. So it's hard to say with Sergio Pettis, you know, whether he's still going to be on track to do anything or not. I don't know. I have a hard time getting a handle on the Pettis brothers at this point.
It feels to me like, in general, he's like the more consistent of the two, but he doesn't have the peaks and the valleys of Anthony.
Yeah.
And I don't know what that means. And then bantamweight's pretty stacked, even though there's not a ton of marquee fighters in that division. There's a ton of good fighters at the top. So it might take him a while to climb up the ladder, especially if you enter the division on a loss. Opener, you had Charles Oliveira submitting Jim Miller, as I mentioned last week. I'm glad they split up the Oliveras by one event, so I wouldn't have to get it confused on the same event. Jim Miller, after the career resurgence he had a couple years ago, it seems like he's kind of hit the skids again, although he was coming off a victory. Are we done here with Jim Miller?
It's so hard to say with Jim Miller, because he gets in there and he never looks really terrible. But, I mean, he was clearly outclassed here by Charles Oliveira, especially once it hit the ground. I mean, it was over before it even started. I mean, Oliveira had that rear naked choke pretty much immediately, and it was just a matter of time before he fully sunk it in. So it was hard to take much away at all from Jim Miller's performance in this. So, I mean, he may still have something left. I mean, he's a guy that feels like he's been around forever. I think they said something about him having the most UFC fights at this point, like 31 or something like that. But I also know that Jim Miller fought, I mean, within a month or two of you know, prior fights at certain points in his career. So, you know, he's certainly a guy that has been, he's got a lot of tread that's been worn off the tire. So it's hard to say what exactly he has left, but he's also been very durable. So, you know, I hesitate to tell guys to retire, even though, you know, obviously they're all listening to the show, but, I hesitate to tell the guys to retire. Though, with Jim Miller, you know, I don't know what more he's going to do at this point than he's already done.
Yeah, but he also seems like a guy that randomly could be on a 3-fight winning streak in a year
exactly.
from now.
Exactly. Yeah. Depending on who you put him in there against, if you put him in there against anyone outside the top 10, I mean, he could very easily beat them. So, or lose to them. So he could be in a 3-fight losing streak or 3-fight win streak, and I would not be surprised either way.
Yeah, he's the lighter weight Andrei Arlovsky.
Absolutely.
Let's move on to some Bellator. There was like a bazillion Bellator fights over the last 2 days. It felt like they kind of owned the weekend, didn't it?
Kind of, yeah, because they had these two cards in Hawaii, and you know, they actually made a little bit of news with them, with Michael Chandler getting the lightweight title back, and then tell me I always forget the name of the woman who fought at the top of the card last night, beat Valerie Letourneau.
Lemele McFarlane?
Exactly. She fought and got a really big hero's reaction at in Hawaii, which makes me think the UFC has really dropped the ball and not getting out there with either BJ Penn or Max Holloway at this point. One more thing, too, with the UFC card on Saturday. If you didn't see it, see if you can track down Joachim Silva and Jared Gordon. That was one of the cooler knockouts that you'll see. Silva just came with a flurry of punches toward the end of that fight in the third round and knocked out Jared Gordon, but Gordon was still on his feet. Still, you know, the ref actually stopped the fight, and Gordon was basically being held up by the fence, but that was a cool knockout. So, yeah, but anyway, back to Bellator. Those two fighters kind of headlined the two events, and you got Lyoto Machida picking up a win, and was it Neiman
Grayson? You damn right he did.
So he's still alive. And you had Neiman Gracie beating Ed Ruth, which messes up my welterweight bracket at this point, but I think the collective bracket had Gracie going through. So, yeah, you had some things that felt like they mattered a little bit more than your typical Bellator card, which was something.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
It felt like they even got the Max Holloway rub in a weird kind of way, because Holloway had just come off the big pay-per-view win, and all he wanted to talk about at the end in the post-fight promo with Rogan was putting an event in Hawaii. They get an event in Hawaii. You've had, for unfortunate reasons, you had Rachel Ostovich in the news a lot. She's tweeting all about it on her social media. So they kind of got a UFC rub off of it. And I think it was Dave Doyle who pointed out last night, like, the UFC puts cards in the weirdest, most like untenable places in the world. How is it they can never get to Hawaii?
Yeah, seriously.
I know he's always said that there's a lot of fees associated with running in Hawaii, but I mean, if Bellator can do it.
That's what I'm saying. If Bellator can do it, they did it twice in a weekend. I mean, they've run Fox or UFC has run back-to-back cards all the time. So why not just do it in Hawaii?
Right. And then you wouldn't even have to get Joe Rogan in one of those shirts like Big John was wearing.
I mean, Scott Coker looked like he was on vacation, so, you know, why not?
Of course, Rogan might actually be smoking the trees that are there.
Almost definitely.
would you make of a tap to strikes by Frank Mir? Javi Ayala, the guy who has to fight all the former UFC fighters when they come to Bellator, he gets a win. It seemed like that was the a lot of people calling for that to be the swan song for Mir.
Well, that was interesting to me. The fact that he tapped to those strikes after he lost his mouthpiece, it made me feel like maybe he thought, okay. that's it for me. You know, Frank Mir is my age. You know, he's 39, so I can't imagine, having never been in a cage myself, going in there and fighting with how I feel on a daily basis. So, you know, for a guy like Frank Mir, who has taken a lot of punishment in the cage over the course of years, you know, Brock Lesnar has never sat in my half guard and turned my face into hamburger. So, you know, for a guy like Frank Mir, I imagine that you know, you've been taking those shots for as long as he has. And, you know, he had this fight on the ground and couldn't tap Ayala. So, you know, that's kind of his calling card. If he can't do that at this point, you know, I don't see him winning a lot of fights on the feet. So you would think that, and again, I don't tell guys to retire, but you would think that he would kind of come to terms with the fact that it's time to look at other things.
Right. He feels like a guy that's kind of exhausted all his options on what he was going to do differently. And just it hasn't worked. I'm always actually amazed by how young he is. I just assume he's much older. I didn't think he's in that Sean Ennis territory, to be honest. You've had less PED failures from what I understand, though.
Just a couple on my end. But, I mean, with Frank Mir, it's remarkable that he's even still fighting. I mean, if you remember back to when he got into his motorcycle accident, that was back in, like, 03 or 04, and they thought that he might never fight again. And just the fact that he came back from that and has had a pretty long career after that.
Well, even in the Brock fights, he was like the establishment guy. He was, he was the gatekeeper, you know, fighting for the rights of UFC fighters against this evil wrestler that was coming in.
I guess
he'll always have that, though. He's always going to be one half of one of their biggest cards ever.
Absolutely.
He was more than just a bystander there too. You know, people have kind of forgotten about that.
Oh man, the promos leading up to that fight were tremendous on both sides. Mm-hmm.
And what a pro wrestling type of story too, where he was dominated in the first fight but got the win and then got, kind of got his comeuppance, and then, you know, Brock went crazy after the. That's still my favorite fight sequence, and I'm not even saying this jokingly, ever in MMA, is like the end of that fight and Brock Lesnar losing his mind and still trying to fight Mir after the bell rang.
It was great. Not to mention the meme of stop trying to get into my strawberries.
Oh, and then poor Bud Light couldn't even get their shout out at the end of that night, but Sable sure did.
Oh man, standing right behind him too.
Uh-huh. That's my favorite part of Brock fights, is just like knowing what Sable looks like nowadays. That's the only time we're allowed to see her, or at the volleyball games of his daughters that he ends up in. Yeah, sometimes Sable makes a surprise appearance there. We don't get to see Mark Mero as much these days though. That's kind of sad.
Mark,
I think he's a motivational speaker.
He might have had more work done than Sable has.
Yeah, he looks nuts. Have you actually seen a photo from him from fairly recently?
Semi-recently, yeah.
Yeah, he, that does not look like the wild man at all.
No, not at all.
It looks like a guy who had a interesting career change and things changed for him very quickly. Someone who things changed for over a year ago, but now is back to normal. Michael Chandler gets his belt back from Brent Primus in the lightweight division. A lot of talk about the first fight being a fluke, which I thought has been a bit overplayed. And even people pointing out that it's been overplayed has become in itself overplayed.
Yes, yes,
over the reason, because it was, I guess it would sound like Austin here. It was what it was. but it does feel like the best lightweight in Bellator has the title again.
Yeah, but I was glad to see this fight because Primus was fighting well in that first fight before the injury happened. So it was good to see him get back in there and, you know, let Michael Chandler take a crack at him and, you know, really show that he was better. So that was, it felt like it resolved something.
What did you think of Chandler calling out Habib at the end of that fight?
I mean, it's easy to call out a guy when you know you're not going to fight him.
I think more fighters, especially in Bellator, I mean, it'd be dumb if a UFC fighter called out a Bellator champion. That would just be counterintuitive. But I think that should happen more often.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You kidding me? They absolutely should. I mean, look at Ben Askren. It eventually worked for him, right?
Right, yeah. So now he's like Dana White's favorite fighter.
Exactly.
Is there anything else from the Friday Bellator card you want to mention?
Not that I can think of.
Cool. Let's move on to Saturday's card. As we mentioned, Lima Leigh McFarlane getting the win over Valerie Letourneau. Pretty dramatic, even the way it kind of turned out. But she was the baby face of all baby faces here.
Oh, man.
And then, of course, the GOAT, Lariota Machida, getting his split decision victory. It's still the Machida puzzle, isn't it? Like, he's clearly not what he was. But even like Eric Anders found out, he still could just be difficult.
Yeah, that is the word to describe Machida, just difficult.
And I would use much better superlatives to describe Lariota Machida than difficult, underselling him over there. And as you mentioned, Neiman Grace taking out Ed Roth, the guy that you just put all your weight behind, Sean.
All of it.
man, Neiman Grace, he has to advance, which does make me sad because that means we're going to get a boring fight somewhere down the line.
Yes, we are.
yeah, King Mo dropping the fight to Liam McGarry, who seems to be on every card. There wasn't a Pitbull brother on here to complete the McGarry slam, but for King Mo, that's a couple of losses in a row. Obviously, he had the loss to Bader, and then he had the win though back in 2017 over Rampage. Are we getting to the end here of King Mo?
Yes, and we really should. He's never really been that good.
No, he's just been the good pro wrestler. He's been masquerading as a fighter.
Exactly. You know, he's had the crown and he's had the gimmick, and that's kind of been his calling card. But every time he's fought someone that's been a decent fighter, or at least most times, he has not come out on top. So this is fitting.
Right. But he has kind of been the quintessential Bellator fighter in a lot of ways. In that it's just like, if it's a big Bellator card, you know, King Mo, he might not even be the headliner, but he's going to be part of one of these cards. Let's talk about some fairly significant news that happened this week concerning who else but ONE Championship, who now I guess has their own segment on the show because we talk about them every single week. But the news announced this week that they actually reached a partnership with Turner Sports. Now, what this is going to be, I think there's been a little bit of misinformation on this. I think some people have thought, oh, it's just going to be like Bellator now, where their events are on, you know, American cable television. Not quite. They have brokered a deal with Turner Sports, which I think will air live on the Bleacher Report Live app and web presence, which a lot of their events aren't free. So it looks like there is going to be a charge for that service. And then the events that you're going to get are going to be tape delayed events. Kind of, I guess the biggest analogy for pro wrestling fans would be like what goes on Access Television with New Japan. And I do want to read an email that we got this week, as we spoke about emails, very important part of the show, so that we do want to keep coming. And let me remind you of that email address. That is MMALivecast@gmail.com. That is MMALivecast@gmail.com. But we got an email from who else but Valentin from Russia. Valentin had not emailed in a couple of weeks. And whenever we don't get an email from one of our regular emailers, I just start panicking and thinking they just stopped listening to the show and found another show to listen to. So I'm glad to see Valentin back. But he basically just asked, "Hey guys, it's Valentin from Russia. What's your opinion on ONE Championship's partner with Turner Sports? Are you interested in watching it on Bleacher Report Live? Are you not excited for another subscription-based MMA event on cable or television? Reruns will be enough. Thanks, and as always, happy holidays." Well, happy holidays to you, Valentin. I hope we hear from you maybe a time or two before the holidays. Yeah, Sean, what do you make of this? Is this a positive development for them? Is this going to help them, especially with their infusion of all the American MMA talent that we talk about week after week? Or is this going to be something that's going to become just another hassle for MMA fans?
Maybe a little bit of both. I mean, it's so hard to keep up with everything that's going on as it is. But now if you have another thing to keep up with, it's you know, just another thing. I don't think that outside the UFC you're going to see any major players come up with something else that you're going to have to pay for and it's going to be real successful. You know, if you're on the Bleacher Report platform, you know, whatever. I don't even know how that really works. It's the first time I've heard of it. But I think a deal with Turner is only going to help one, you know, to at least get some kind of exposure, even if it's a highlight show. You know, I got to think it's going to do something for him, because ONE has been one of the promotions that I would have liked to check out before, but I'd never have because it's just been too much of a hassle. So to have them get kind of, even if it's like, if it feels like an old syndicated show or something like that, I think is going to do something for them. I don't know exactly what. You know, I don't think another company is going to succeed long term with like a sustained pay-per-view model. But if you're looking at like one pay-per-view a year where you do like a super card and like the rest of the year, you got these shows on TNT where you can kind of keep up on what's going on in ONE Championships. I mean, that may be something, I don't know, but, I think it's a positive development. I don't know that it's necessarily important.
Yeah, I think that's a very good way of framing it, because I just don't know how many eyes you're going to attract to cable television in 2019, 2018. Through that method. I just don't know if that's the way where you capture people's interest anymore. And on something on delay, you know, ESPN for years would rarely have live sports, but there was no spoilers for like the fishing championships. So it was live to you you were watching it. And that's just not the case anymore. But I think in a weird kind of way, if this model still exists, the whole what Bellator tries to do, what the UFC prelims attempt to do, is that they just catch the channel surfer seeing something that they might be interested in, and then they're drawn in. If that's a thing that can still happen, then obviously I think that would be a good thing, where it's, hey, it's cool, it's sports, it's MMA, let's see what this is. If you have no idea, no awareness of what's going on, I think for people like us who just kind of have a general awareness of anything, or should be of everything, it's only going to be must-see viewing on something that we missed that we found out was really, really good.
Yes.
So say one of these Mighty Mouse fights, it just turns into the, you know, one of these great fights, or there's a Eddie Alvarez fight, actually more likely.
That would be fun.
That is just a blowaway fight, and you know, you missed it, you didn't want to purchase it on the Bleacher Report Live app, then cool, I'm going to DVR that, or I'm going to find that on my television. I don't know if that world still exists though, where that's how you just attract people in. I wouldn't mind a more syndicated version, like you said, and it doesn't have to be pretending like it's live or anything like that, but just kind of what's going on in the promotion. I think in that case, people like us would find that as a very useful tool, because there's too much of having to fend for yourself right now in MMA. And I wonder now, especially with ESPN coming up, even with the UFC, that's going to be a thing where you just have to figure all this out on your own. And there's not a lot of stuff that's so nicely packaged for you to view. But yeah, paying extra money. I mean, we're already having to pay for the zone. So
yeah, exactly.
I don't want to pay for anything else.
Exactly. That is my limit. If I'm paying for the zone, I'm not paying for anything else.
What a weird weekend for DAZN too. Did you feel any buzz for this Canelo fight?
No.
Yeah, and it's that seemed to me, and maybe the despite his opponents being named Rocky, which has some currency in boxing in a way, I felt it was the pay-per-view issue, like the lack of pay-per-view was what was doing it. Did you get that sort of sense as well?
Yeah, I nobody knows what DAZN is, you know, outside of people who have bought it for Bellator or like diehard boxing fans, which, you know, I don't know how many of those there are. And even if you're a diehard boxing fan, it's like, I don't know. It's odd. Like DAZN doesn't, it seems to exist in this like parallel universe where it exists and some people know about it, but not really enough people for it to do anything. And yet there's still like semi-significant stuff on there. So it's kind of strange.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
Well, it seems like even though they do have quite a bit of advertising on television, on any television provider, they hawk the hell out of their own pay-per-views like all the time. When you're watching any other's programming, you know, you get almost sick of, you know, the Joe Rogan screaming all the time because it's always on there on your television.
Oh!
Right. And you just don't have that with DAZN. You got the buffer commercial with Canelo in it, but it's not as explainable. And it's something, think back to 2014 when the network launched and it was $9.99 over and over again.
Yeah.
And while that was super annoying and they kind of turned the network heel for a little while, it got the point across though. And I don't think there's a mechanism for that with boxing pay-per-views right now.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and it just like we were saying, it's hard in combat sports right now. Wrestling being the big exception, especially now that they're moving to Fox, it just seems hard to just catch someone and suck someone in. It feels like the learning curve has never been steeper, and it might continue for that, or it might be reduced on ESPN. We got to see how that goes here in the new future. But let's talk about the January war in MMA. Is that a good way to frame what's going on?
War may be a bit of an overstatement, but I'll take it.
Hey, Scott Coker is taking it as like a victory lap. But this is something we also got an email at, and it's from our other great friend, Patrick from Germany. He says, "Hey guys, it's me, Patrick. My question this week is about it's about the canceling of UFC 233 because they have no main event. Or did they try because of the Bellator card that will be outstanding? I think that the UFC is scared to lose too many pay-per-view buys to Bellator. Thank you for your time and greetings to Valentin from Russia." So now we got emailers interacting with each other on email through us, which is pretty awesome.
I love it.
Yeah, those are our two most consistent emailers. So I'm glad they're connecting with each other. Maybe I should give each other's email address so they can have their own conversations. But yeah, Sean, what do you make of UFC 233? I believe that's the correct numbered event.
Yes.
Which may just be one of those like we had back in 2012 where the event stays there, but nothing ever actually happened. That was the event, of course, as we spoke about last week, initially to be headed by Suguro and TJ Dillashaw, and all that was left after that got moved to the initial ESPN card, the Robbie Lawler Ben Askren fight. The card even took a further hit this week with Dominic Cruz having to pull out of his fight with John Lineker, and it feels like the pay-per-view officially is being called postponed. Postponed and canceled seem to be a synonymous term as it comes to the UFC. And what we were saying about the January wars, or what Patrick was referring to, is it's the night of Bellator's big card in a similar area in Inglewood, California, whereas the UFC card was going to be in Anaheim, California. So you have stuff happening in the same area of the country, and you have a pretty good Bellator card. And that's the card, of course, with the Fader Bader World Heavyweight Grand Prix Final. You got Gegard Mousasi on there. You have Aaron Pico having one of his fights. And you even have the debut of Jake Hager, or better known to this audience as Jack Swagger. So a pretty loaded Bellator card, to be sure, and a pretty underwhelming UFC card. What do you think caused the cancellation on the UFC's part?
I think it's just that. I mean, you've got Bellator's best shot against the UFC's, what the UFC would consider a pretty below average card, even for their standards at this point in 2019. So I think they saw this as the risk is far greater than the reward. I mean, how much damage would it really do if Bellator outdrew the UFC? Probably not a ton. But it wouldn't be a great narrative. So it's the better narrative is, you know, we didn't have a suitable main event, so we decided to postpone the event. This had nothing to do with Bellator, you know, even if nobody buys that.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Well, I'll say I think Bellator's influence on this has been a little overstated.
Yeah, I would agree.
Like, I think if the UFC had anything, they simply don't have a card.
They don't have anything. Yeah, they don't have
it. They just don't have one, period. It's not like if they had anything to put at the top of their card, they would do it. And I don't think they would feel that impacted by Bellator. I think Bellator is like the icing on the cake.
Yes.
for canceling this card. I think there's a chance that given all the circumstances, if there was no Bellator card, this thing could still get canceled.
Yes, I agree. I agree. I think the fact that they moved a couple of fights onto the ESPN cards had a lot to do with it. You know, if you didn't have that going on, you know, this new TV deal kicking in right now where you want to load up these cards and front load them, you know, you probably don't see this card getting canceled. You probably see some weaker Fox cards, you know, and they wouldn't think much of it. But with it being the first cards of the ESPN deal, they probably want to get some decent fights on there. So I think that has a lot to do with it. And, you know, like you say, Bellator is kind of the final straw. So, yeah, Scott Coker can take his victory lap and Dana White will not care. So I think it's kind of what we're looking
at. Oh, no, Dana White will care. It just won't matter.
Right. That's the thing.
Far be it from Dana White to let something just roll off his back.
Dana White taking the high road.
Yeah, he's never met that road before in the past. This is different though. And to me, this just indicates how actually, this is gonna sound weird, how actually far ahead of Bellator that the UFC feels it is. Because there was a time, and I guess it would be like a decade now that we're sitting in 2018, where if any other MMA cropped up, suddenly we were gonna have a free card on Spike, weren't we?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They were going to put Rampage it was Rampage Dan Henderson on Spike for free, you know, that for a light heavyweight title fight. It was light heavyweight? Yeah, light heavyweight title fight. But yeah, that doesn't happen these days.
Yeah, the first UFC event where I ever had like a party for when I just moved into this house, and like I said, it was over a decade ago, Irving and Silva, remember that masterpiece?
Oh, yeah.
Because it was a Fedor, it was an Affliction pay-per-view.
That's right.
Yeah, wow, Vince and Dana are the same dude, aren't they?
They really are. It is not a coincidence that Dana White admires Vince McMahon.
Right, and they hate each other. Like at the same, like it's
of course
because they're the same. They're Cornette and Heyman. They're the same side of both of the whatever I'm trying to say. You get the analogy.
I hear you.
Yeah, but I think that's when. See, like, Vince does that still to this day, what they're doing, you know, in the UK and all that, like, where it's not about that he's afraid of competition necessarily, but it's just in his blood to kill all competition.
Yes.
and make sure it doesn't live. I think the UFC, from a corporate structure right now, is just okay with taking the L on a night, like, you know, just getting out of Dodge. I think in the past, they would have done whatever they could to flex their superiority. I think now they feel so far ahead of something like Bellator that they're just simply not concerned.
Yeah, and plus I think Bellator would be unnecessarily hard to kill. I mean, you would have to really go after them, and it's just not, the juice ain't worth the squeeze on that one.
Yeah, what would be the point? Like, you're exactly. Still on ESPN. Like, exactly. you still can run pay-per-views. You still have Conor McGregor. You still, you know, you're a phone call away from Brock Lesnar and maybe a Brinks truck away from Ronda Rousey. Like, you're still so much better. You don't have to have those kind of insecurities, yeah. I don't think. And I'm just glad that this happened because, one, I would kind of rather watch the Bellator card, but it's hard. It's not like it's the Monday Night Wars where you just have a remote where you can flip back and forth when one thing's on pay-per-view and one's on television.
Right, exactly. That's the thing, is you end up, it just makes things a lot more complicated than they have to be.
Yeah. You know, speaking of things that were more complicated than it had to be, I think we're going to finish this show right
the
there.
King with, of the segue tonight. Note.
Yeah, that's pretty much the only thing I had going on tonight was the segue. Sean, you haven't been on the show for a while, so you have to really blow the plug section in whenever we go to you for a plug. You're like Shawn Michaels when you come in, you got to hawk every piece of merch that's going on. So why don't you plug your personal social media and give us an update on what's going on in our hiatus on the podcast?
Yeah, absolutely. You can follow me on social media. My handle is at Sean Ennis. That's S-H-A-W-N-E-N-N-I-S. That is where I tweet about pro wrestling, MMA, and Philadelphia sports. The Eagles ended up pulling out that win over the Rams, by the way, for all you non-NFL people. If you want to check out my other podcast, that is called Stories of Yore and Yours. That's Y-O-R-E and Y-O-U-R-S. And I've got a Christmas episode coming out this week. That drops on Wednesday. A couple of Christmas stories that I'll be telling there. And I've also got a collaboration coming up with another podcast called Get Grimm. And that is spelled G-E-T-G-R-I-M-M, as in the Grimm Brothers. That's a show that usually tells fairy tales. And we're going to be doing a Christmas story on there as well, where I do a number of voices. It's kind of like an audio drama. And I'll be doing several voices on that show. And that drops, I believe, a week from today, next Sunday, the 23rd. So you can check that out as well. And you can follow the Stories of Yore and Yours on any social media platform at SYY Podcast. So that's what I've got going on.
Yeah, and I would definitely encourage people, of course, to check out Sean, check out his whole season one that he's got going on there. But follow that social media account, because Sean is an endless, I wouldn't say self-promoter. He's an endless promoter of others in the podcasts he promotes. And I just find cool podcasts that I never knew existed. And it's cool to see that independent podcast family grow, and Sean's a part of that. And it's great for just the user. If, you know, I know you love all the great content we're putting out here at the Torch, but maybe you want to listen to something different on occasion. Maybe you want to listen to a How I Met Your Mother podcast. Well, if you go on Sean's timeline, you will find a tweet to find one of those. So I think that's a really cool thing to have. And it's just cool to see the spirit and the networking that can come up through social media without people having to go to these fake events the way it does in the corporate world. It's really cool to see that. You could follow me on Twitter, Rob M. Vallejos, R-O-B-M-V-A-L-L-E-J-O-S. And check out my latest post for MMATorch.com. I hadn't really got anything up there in a while, but I actually had a video post, a vlog called A Round by Rob. And the what I'm hoping to accomplish in this video series is we have these roundtable topics on MMA Torch. And I just want to take one of those topics and do a video response to what the topics were. So I would definitely encourage you to check that out. This past week, the topic was on Max Holloway being the greatest featherweight of all time. It's late, folks. Sorry. Max Holloway being the greatest featherweight of all time, in my opinion, on that. So I got that in there. I'm hoping to get another one out this week. And like I said, you'll already know what the topic is, because it'll already be a roundtable. Usually that's loaded up on the site. So definitely check that out and check out the site as a whole. We got a bunch of stuff, a bunch of new stuff going up every day. This past busy weekend of MMA was all covered, so if you missed any of that, go through there and you can check out the recaps. And of course, hit us up on all the social media accounts. That's at MMA Torch, at MMA T-O-R-C-H. The show proper Twitter account, at MMA Livecast. That's at MMA L-I-V-E-C-A-S-T. Don't forget, you can also send the show an email, just like Valentin and Patrick did. And maybe you can make friends with people the way they are making friends with each other. That email address is at MMA Livecast. That's at MMA LIVECAST. And be sure to follow all the MMA Torch related websites, PW Podcast, PW Torch Livecast, and of course, go VIP in a podcast. I am loving on the VIP section. I know I've talked about them on here before, and I shouted them out on Twitter, the Pull Apart Podcast. There's so many wrestling podcasts outside of the Torch universe that's really hard to keep up. Plus, you have Vince Russo hosted podcasts that I can never bring myself to listen to, but these guys break it down and give you all the details and tell you whether or not you need to check out that podcast, and it's definitely something I would recommend. And of course, go through the archives. We're talking about fun stuff like Right to Censor over here, and how that played out. Well, if you want to see how it played out and read what was going on behind the scenes, you could definitely go through that Torch archive and go week by week and find out what was happening in real time. But that's enough plugs for me. So for Sean, I am Robert. We are done. We were out of here, and we will talk to you next week.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free additions to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.
Yeah.